Apache voices alive for generations to come. It's one of the easiest ways to make a lasting difference, and it costs nothing today. Visit kpfk.org/give to learn how, because the greatest legacy isn't what you leave behind, it is what you help keep alive. Help make sure KPFK is still turning up the volume, challenging the status quo, and inspiring listeners for the next 60 years and beyond.
Hello, and you are listening to Eco Justice Radio. Our show presents environmental and climate stories from a social justice frame, featuring voices not necessarily heard on mainstream media. Welcome. I am Jessica Aldridge. On today's show, Bioautonomy, Designing Nature-Based Green Buildings and Cities, host Carrie Kim interviews Moeen Nodei, CEO and lead architect of Bioautonomy, specializing in nature-based solutions for buildings and cities across the world. The architectural design from Bioautonomy uses a holistic and nature-based approach for buildings and cities to address the climate and biodiversity emergency. Together with an international network, the team works to accelerate the transformation to autonomous development with nature-based solutions. Bioautonomy's mission is to make buildings and cities become a force for restoring the natural world. Moeen Nodei is the founder, CEO, and lead architect for Bioautonomy. Thank you for tuning in to Bioautonomy, Designing Nature-Based Green Buildings and Cities.
Aloha. Thank you for tuning in. My name is Carrie Kim, and we're thrilled to be here with Moeen Nodei of Bioautonomy to talk about a holistic, nature-based approach to building and cities to address the climate and the current biodiversity crisis. We thank the Tongva ancestors of these lands as our show takes place on the ancestral homelands of the Tongva. Welcome, Moeen. Thank you so much for joining us on the show this morning from Malaga, Spain.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
You know, the pandemic has catalyzed many people to deeply consider and reconsider how we're living. Many people have actually abandoned cities in favor of simpler, more nature-connected living, or simply out of necessity because they can no longer even afford a life in the cities. We recognize the unsustainable crash course of continuing our current consumerist, Anthropocene-centered lifestyle. We know, especially since 2020 and before then, that current systems of politics, economics, and the inequities in society is unraveling before our eyes. And this can be received actually as good news. So we can respond, as you're showing and demonstrating, to the turbulence of our times creatively, collaboratively, and learn to harmonize versus domineer nature. So if you could share with us, Indigenous peoples have been doing this for countless eons, and we would do well to learn and embody their ancient wisdom. If you could share with us about the name Bioautonomy, what is this pointing to?
Yeah. So basically, like you mentioned, what we do really is something that the ancient people have practiced for a long time. Before we even had infrastructure, we were developing our buildings based on the natural environment. Mm-hmm. We were using the right forms of design to achieve the performance we want out of our building. But then when we basically invented infrastructure, we started to just building structures and connect them to the utilities that we consume. Mm-hmm. So somehow we kind of lost the knowledge of how to design buildings without depending on infrastructure. Mm-hmm. But when you look at all the ancient civilizations, when there was no infrastructure, they were able to develop buildings that maintain comfortable temperatures, that had water and they could process their own sewage. Mm-hmm. So they were living and sustaining life on the planet. And so does many other species on this planet. They all have learned how to sustain life mm-hmm. without depending on centralized infrastructure.
Have you been learning also from our relatives in the natural world and how they build their homes and colonies? And
absolutely. So basically,
have you studied most, or what's the most intriguing thing you've learned in doing that?
Well, basically, all the species have different solutions of how they sustain life on Earth. And I mean, many times trees are a very good example because they really show how you live in a circular way, how you reuse the byproducts that you produce for something else. Mm-hmm. So basically, looking at trees, looking at any kind of species on this planet, we learn their strategy of how to do it. It's not trying just to replicate, trying to build a building that looks like a tree. You have to understand the strategy. How do they treat waste?
Mm-hmm. Right?
Exactly. So you look at those strategies and then we mimic them and then we implement them into our buildings to achieve mm-hmm. the same performance.
Would you say one of the key differences is that nature, of course, is already operating interdependently versus in human society, most things are much more separatist. You don't work so much as a network. People have single family home dwellings, everything. I mean, it didn't always used to be like that. You know, we used to live in villages and be more community centric.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, if you look at, once again, if you look at trees, you might see, you know, individual trees growing here and there. But if you look what's going on underneath the ground, you simply realize that all the roots are connected with each other. And they, in between them, they send nutrients to each other, whoever needs mm-hmm. it, whoever has it more. They send it to each other, so they cooperate.
Yeah, and I share.
And that's the way we need to design our future cities, is that we need to make all our buildings produce their own utilities, but also to co-work with each other and help each other, that when one building is low on one kind of resource, the building surrounding it can supply them and mm-hmm. help them.
Yeah, it goes back to village-minded consciousness, I would say. You know, that concept of sharing is very important, especially, you know, given the backdrop of the pandemic, at the early moments of the pandemic when people experienced, especially here, a lot of hoarding. The worst that we could experience from people on a material level in that way.
Right.
You know, could you share a little about your backstory? Did you emerge out of a career in conventional architecture?
Yes, I have an international architectural engineering degree. Mm-hmm. So I started to study around the world, and I started to work in different parts of the world. And I very quickly got involved in some of the biggest construction projects in the world, developing high-rise buildings, skyscrapers, basically. Mm. And I really quickly realized that this is completely the wrong direction we're going. Mm-hmm. This is nowhere close to where we need to go. So the conventional way of building kind of turned me off very quickly, mm-hmm. and I started to search for alternative ways of building. So naturally, I started to look at how ancient people were building on this planet, because they designed their buildings without having infrastructure.
Right.
And then the more I was digging into that, I came across architects around the world who were also going in this direction. And my path came across with Michael Reynolds, mm-hmm. who is a famous architect who is based in New Mexico.
Yeah, Earthship Biotexture, right?
Exactly, the founder of Earthship Biotexture. And I contacted him, and I was like so convinced that what he was doing was going the right direction. So I told him, you know, I'll come, I'll work for free for you. I just want to learn everything that you're doing. I was so inspired by his work. Mm-hmm. So I went there and I started working with him, and then eventually I got hired and I started traveling with the team all around the world and developing these buildings, and I realized, you know, this is the future. This is how we have to develop our buildings. Mm-hmm. And so I decided early on that I'm going to spend, you know, at least 10 years to master this concept. Yeah. And then I'm going to develop my own branch out of it, which mm-hmm. is autonomy today. Mm-hmm. And offer, you know, more alternative designs and with more alternative materials, but also to bring back the concept to urban areas, because, right. you know, that's very important, because most of our pollution is happening in urban areas.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I feel that the more people abandon the cities, they become more dystopic, you know, that the cities actually need to change, because they are a locus for many people, like you said, of pollution. And we know and anticipate the boom and rise of these mega cities, you know, of just of incredible density. And I don't know what you have to say about people who have the approach that we need to be more dense, we need to be more vertical. And, you know, what is your feeling about that? As you were saying, you used to build high rises and you felt that was a wrong direction. But some people are absolutely adamant that we need to build vertical.
Well, see, the reason we keep making our cities is so dense is because the capital is there, the money is there. Mm-hmm. So we value those piece of properties, those piece of land as a good investment, because if we develop our buildings there, then we get a good return of investment when we sell them. Okay, I agree financially that's a good strategy, but now we understand that the table have turned and we have to be more ecological minded when we develop our buildings. So instead of just, you know, packing on to our buildings, we should be more responsible, and we should actually place our buildings in areas that we humans have degraded, mm-hmm. and make a plan that we're going to develop here and turn this area back and create an ecosystem here, restore the ecosystem that we destroyed here. Mm-hmm. And put more value into that. Because see, today we just go and we take a piece of property and we just clear all the ecosystem.
Oh, yeah.
That already exists there.
So destructive.
Yeah. And we do it in cities as well. You know, this is how we kill the ecosystems in our city. So we're saying, because see, we can't hide the fact that every building has a footprint on this planet. Mm-hmm. So we have to make sure that we place that footprint in a responsible way. So I believe that placing our buildings on degraded land with a plan of reusing our byproducts to help
restore
the ecosystem is a more responsible approach.
More harmonious living, you know, because I can't tell you, especially living here, it's Tongalands, but we also have to say it's Los Angeles, because that's really kind of the superficial level. The way people live is from a totally different paradigm than the Tongva. And it's very difficult to witness every day, every single square inch of land being developed, and in the wrong way, as you know, according to what we're talking about. So, you know, people just take their bulldozers. They never think twice of what's happening. They don't even know what's happening in the soil, to the microorganisms, to the mycelial network. They have no idea. And nor do they seem to care.
Right.
I think it's just a lot of ignorance that we have. And it's what do you have to say about the educational process of getting people to remember that we are related to everything around us and underneath us, above us?
Yeah, I think you made a great point there, that education has an important part of this, because let's just take designers, architects, for example, in this world. Architects and builders are just educated to build the same way over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, almost,
and
if you
they're
go
rewarded
back,
for it, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. And they're rewarded for these, you know, artistic buildings that they make, but they greenwash them these days. They just decorate them with a lot of plants and call them sustainable, but underneath the facade, all the buildings are still consuming from the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
But see, what needs to fundamentally change is basically the environmental crisis that we're facing today is pretty much a giant design crisis.
Mm-hmm.
We the way we design our buildings, our landscape, our roads, the way we consume everything is just a design crisis. If we go back and understand how to design more aligned with the natural world, then, you know, we won't create all these pollution that we're creating in this world. So what I'm saying is that the future of architecture should be about developing and designing ecosystems, not just about developing structures.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only
thing architects, a great point you make.
Mm-hmm. That's the only thing architects are learning in school today, is how to create just dead structures. There's no relationship with the natural world. So you can't blame the architects when they come out and they have no understanding of how to develop a building that is operating in harmony with the natural world.
Do you work with any kind of architectural schools? I mean, places like Sky Art, places that are more progressive, that there may be interest in, you know, obviously this can be a whole movement globally and needs to be.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. We are in some early discussions with some universities mm-hmm. where we're bringing this concept to them, because this is actually far beyond than what they're teaching in their universities.
Mm-hmm. You know,
they're still very much stuck in the whole green building certification system, which is like a 50 years old concept.
You know? Tell us what's wrong with that.
All these certifications that we have for green buildings today, you know, they're called LEED certification, BREEAM mm-hmm. certification. There's so many of them today. All of these benefit the economy much more than the ecology.
Mm.
And they're all based on a theoretical certification. So basically, you design a building and then you calculate how it's going to consume energy. And then you go and apply for the certification before you even have built the building. You get your certification, you market yourself as a green building, you build it. And then when they've gone back to these buildings and made tests on them, they've seen that most of them actually consume much more energy than they promised. So it is very clear now in the market today, they call this the energy performance gap, that these kind of certification systems are not sustainable. This is just, you know, we're just lying to ourselves. So obviously now more and more companies are realizing this, and less people want to actually recognize themselves with this certification system.
So you think that's going to change then, or you see that changing now?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first of all, the only thing these certifications are addressing basically most of the time is energy, is lowering energy consumption. Everyone is talking about carbon emissions.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the reality is that when you look at buildings today, it's not only emissions that is the problem. The amount of water consumption and the amount of sewage that we produce in our buildings also have a big impact on the biodiversity loss and the climate change.
Mm-hmm.
Look, one simple fact, that almost 80% of today's sewage is still not treated.
Ugh.
Goes straight into nature, basically.
Wow.
That says a lot about how our buildings are developed. You know?
I'm sure most people don't know that either.
Yeah, exactly. Because we see no relation. You know, we flush the toilet and then we don't see what happens. While in our buildings, every time you're consuming the water, that water goes automatically into a greenhouse zone where you are growing plants.
Mm-hmm.
So you're reusing your own water, your gray water, mm-hmm. for growing food.
Mm-hmm.
So if you put something bad in your water, if you use chemical soap, if you use chemical detergent,
medication,
that's going to straight go into your food, right? So there's a relationship there that makes you to realize, okay, I should be more responsible what I put in my water, what I put in my sewage drain.
Absolutely. You know, we're going to take our break in just 1 minute, but I wanted to say that, you know, I watched one of your videos on YouTube, and it was a drone's eye view over structures. They were embedded, it looked like, in, you know, kind of in a forested area. It was a straight, like a scene out of Avatar. And in while we're in flight over this area, the tagline asks us to imagine living with nature free from economic stress. So we're going to take a break right here, but we'll come back with that and have you elaborate.
Okay.
Hey, listeners, quick break here. We hope that you're enjoying Eco Justice Radio. Stay connected by subscribing on all major podcast apps and visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, to check out previous shows and guests and get connected with us on social media. Today, we are featuring an encore presentation of Bioautonomy, Designing Nature-Based Green Buildings and Cities, with host Carrie Kim and guest Moeen Nodei, CEO and lead architect for Bioautonomy.
So Moeen, if you could go back and explain about this tagline, because of course it's so enticing to hear that we could live with nature free from economic stress, especially coming off the pandemic, as we know so many people are struggling and have struggled financially. And it's not just since 2020. You know, there's many, many people, as we know, in Black and brown communities, there's so much social inequity going on and has been going on for hundreds of years. So if you could speak to us on how Bioautonomy envisions this possibility.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, besides on focusing on nature's well-being, we also have to focus on our own well-being. So, and you know, the planet is stressed and so are we, and this is clear. One of the main reasons we are stressed is because this constant of making a living. We have to make a living in order to survive. You know, while you look at any other species on this planet, they've figured out their survival already. Even a worm knows how to survive without having to make a living. So how come we don't understand this, and yet we think we are, you know, the most intellectual issues on this planet? Well, we constantly are working in order to pay our basic needs to survive. Mm-hmm. We need comfortable shelter, mm-hmm. which we need housing. So we have to pay rent every month. Mm-hmm. For our buildings. Mm-hmm. We need food. Mm-hmm. So we have to pay for food every day. We need water. So we have to pay for water every day. Mm-hmm. We need sanitation. Everyone pays for their sanitation. Most people don't think about it, but it's included in your rent. Mm-hmm. You're basically your sewage. You have to pay for the sewage.
Your trash.
Exactly. So when you make a building operate autonomously without depending on infrastructure, mm-hmm. it's all the system for it to produce all the utilities that you need is already incorporated in the design. Mm-hmm. So the building is able to produce natural temperatures and keep you comfortable inside. Mm-hmm. The building is able to produce clean, drinkable water for you. Mm-hmm. You can produce fruits and vegetables inside your house. Mm-hmm. You can produce your own electricity. Basically, all the basic necessities that we need to live a comfortable life on this planet, we can make our buildings produce that for us.
Right. That's amazing. I mean, it's amazing just to think of getting rid of every single utility bill you have, essentially, and having your own water, food production, all of this contained within your own homes. And then, of course, sharing. You know, I don't know if you are right now or if you have any projects underway that are being built more as a village. It was like that one video I was discussing earlier, which it looked like it was more of kind of a community setting.
Yes, absolutely. We're actually involved in several different community projects at this point where we're looking at, you know, like that video you're referring to. That's a project that's planned, going to happen in Canada.
Uh-huh.
And we have several other projects similar to that we're involved in Greece, in Italy, and here in Spain as well, because we've proven that it's possible to develop buildings that operate autonomously. So now there's so many buildings around the world that operate like this. You know, people are now open and ready to do it on a larger scale.
Mm-hmm.
and
I think people, the pandemic also has taught many people, I think, that living in isolation isn't some idealistic thing. It's actually much more difficult to live isolated.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We know it's already happening that there's many eco-communities, there's land trusts, there's different ways. And then we have indigenous peoples who have lived in community. That is just the way they live. And so, you know, it's natural that we would be understanding it's time to return to that. And that's going to be a solution to our species survival. Could you talk to us about where it is that you have been receiving the greatest support for autonomous building globally? You know, this includes dealing with regulations and support through governance that maybe you're entirely, you know, off grid in that sense. So if you could talk about that a little bit.
Well, honestly, the greatest support is coming from people, from normal people like me and you, people who understand the importance of taking it to this direction. The most challenging has been the regulations.
Okay.
Absolutely. 10 years ago, it was so difficult to get permission for building a building like this. Today, we're much more aware about the environmental crisis. So now the regulations are opening up slowly and slowly. But that's the regulation definitely has been the biggest challenge. But the amount of people who gets involved in our project and come and volunteer and really put their heart and put their soul into it because they so believe this is the future way of living. This is really what keeps motivating me to, you know, to go for this. Even though I'm completely...
The tide will turn. The tide will turn, as we know. It's kind of like taking a barge and trying to redirect a barge going in one direction. So we know it takes a little bit of time, but then there's also momentum. So, you know, we know that part of those regulations, I'm sure not all of it is to protect people, but is really kind of by design. And I wonder, could you, we're going to wrap up now, and I wondered if you could tell listeners how they can find you, how they can reach out to Bioautonomy. What's the best way to be in contact with you?
Yes, so we have our website, bioautonomy.com. And then we're also on most of the social media platforms. We're on Facebook at Bioautonomy, Instagram at Bioautonomy. We're on LinkedIn and Pinterest and YouTube. So, you know, wherever platform you're more comfortable, you can join us there and sign up on our website because we're going to notify you as soon as we're releasing the Bioautonomy Online Academy. And every time we have a new project where you can get involved, you will also be notified about it.
Thank you so much, Moeen. It's been just amazing to speak with you about this. And it's great to learn that this is happening and it's happening globally. So thank you and all that you are manifesting with Bioautonomy. And listeners, check out Bioautonomy Online, volunteer on project and learn as much as you can. Spread the good word.
Thank you so much, Carrie. Thank you for having me. And thank you for what you're doing.
Anytime. Thank you so much.
Thank you to our guest today, Moeen Nodei, and thank you to our listeners for joining us. This has been Bioautonomy, Designing Nature-Based Green Buildings and Cities. Please connect with us on social media at EcoJustice Radio and SoCal350. If you like what you heard and you want others to be informed, subscribe to our podcast, share the episodes, and get that information out there. You have been listening to EcoJustice Radio on KPFK Los Angeles, a project of SoCal 350. The show can be found on all major podcast apps and at ecojusticeradio.org. Created by Mark and JP Morse, executive producer Jack Eye, producer Jessica Aldridge, engineer Blake Lampkin, interview hosted by Carrie Kim, and original music by Javier Cadre. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.
The Bradcast. Experts have said that the case has little chance of success at the Supreme Court, much like the numerous other GOP election lawsuits that are pending in battleground states. But then again, those experts, they are just guessing. They are hoping.
With your host, Brad Friedman, and producer, Desi Doyen.
There's enough going on right now. There are enough X factors still remaining that that's one I'd rather not contemplate.
Correct. You are, as usual, correct, Desi Doyen.
Tune into the Bradcast.